Welcome to episode 11 of the Dean's Podcast, the podcast about issues shaping graduate studies in Canada. This podcast is brought to you by University Affairs Magazine. My name is Carolyn Waters, and I'm the Dean of Graduate Studies at Dalhousie University in Halifax, Nova Scotia. I'm also the president of the Canadian Association of Graduate Studies, CAGS, for the year 2009. Every month, you can listen in as I talk to other deans, faculty, postdocs, and graduate students about where graduate studies is going in Canada and internationally. In this episode, I talk with Marianne Stanford, chair of the Canadian Association of Postdoctoral Scholars. CAPS, so CAPS and CAGS, have been working together at the national level to try and set standards when it comes to dealing with postdoctoral fellows in Canada. This includes clearly defining what a postdoctoral fellow is, setting up benefit systems, and looking at professional development. So listen in as Marianne explains the issues currently affecting postdocs and what steps she thinks needs to be taken by universities so that postdocs are not, quote, left out in the parking lot, end of quote. But first, a message from our sponsor.
Hi, my name is Dick Sullentize, and I'm responsible for all career advertising and university affairs. Did you know that most graduate students don't know where to look for academic jobs? Simply because their supervisors haven't told them. Tell the PhDs and postdocs you advise to visit www.universityaffairs.ca for the latest job offers in every discipline. It's free, and it's updated daily.
Hello, it's Carolyn Waters, and I'm here with Marianne Stanford, and we're at the CAGS conference in Halifax this year, so welcome to Marianne.
Hi, my name is Marianne Stanford. I'm a postdoctoral fellow at the Ottawa Hospital Research Institute, and I'm also the chair of the Canadian Association of Postdoctoral Scholars.
So that's CAPS for short. So CAPS and CAGS have been working together at a national level to try and come to clear definitions of what a postdoctoral fellow is, how we might look at benefits, professional development, and other issues related around postdocs, because more and more graduate studies faculties have taken on the administrative and sort of caregiving of postdocs at Canadian universities. So I'm going to start with Marianne. Maybe you'll tell us who is a postdoc.
So the term postdoctoral fellow is actually more of a historical term used to designate that temporary position between finishing your PhD and typically it used to be moving into your academic position. But with more and more post-PhD graduates going into alternate positions, the issue of being a postdoctoral fellow has actually become a little muddy. And so one of the things we'd like to emphasize in Canada is getting a defined status in what actually constitute postdocs. And we really like to emphasize the temporary nature of that position.
So that means after 20 years, you're not a postdoc?
No, not after 20 years. After 20 years, you are definitely something else, no matter if you're called a postdoc or not.
So where are we in this discussion about definitions? I know we've had two meetings. Have we actually come to some sort of agreement?
I think we've really banged out a very close definition, and the definition is somewhat structured on the same definition that exists in the U.S., sponsored by the National Postdoc Association there, and I think we've put our own Canadian spin on it, but I think we're very close.
Okay, let's have it.
Oh, God, I don't know what I've got in my head. I know it's a temporary position.
There's a career goal, I think, in research.
Yeah, it's a clear career goal in either research or another career path of one's choosing.
And a developmental path.
Yes, a clear path from the PhD to the chosen field, as opposed to this dead-ended, in limbo position that sometimes it exists as.
Okay, so this temporary nature of the job is really important, so it defines 3 years or 6 years, but clearly not 20, so something in the middle. So why is that important?
I think it's important because, again, historically it was always known to be temporary. Unfortunately, temporary has gotten longer. Originally, within a year or two post-PhD, you're ready to move into your academic career. And there are many disciplines now that postdoc position has to be longer. There has to be more papers, more productivity, and it's kind of stretched out to an average of 4 and 5 and sometimes the maximum of 6 years. So it leads this opportunity for someone to languish, and we really want to avoid that kind of languishing in limbo.
So why is languishing in limbo a problem? Is it one of exploitation or lack of opportunity? So where is the real problem here? People aren't on the unemployment line.
Well, it's kind of funny. I mean, we kind of designate it as a parking lot. The postdocs kind of seem to stagnate there, and they really don't seem to move on. If they don't move on to the strict academic career, they seem to not know where to go. And I think just lengthening the period because people don't know how to move outside of it is actually not solving the problem at all. And I think right now, because there's very little mechanism, people are just staying put. And
so I think in some sense we have a collective responsibility to help people recognize other career paths. For example, only about half or less of PhDs end up in the, you know, typical fairyland professor's job, and most of them end up in government, private places like that. So what could we do, or what is being done to really help PhDs be prepared for positions other than the typical?
I think there's a lot being done at the graduate schools level, and I think it's very varied. At the postdoc level, I think it tends to be very focused on academia, and we could do more to move into other career paths or even foster the idea that other career paths are valid and are just as successful and aren't a second choice.
Or a failure.
Yeah. There's this real perception that sometimes, you know, if you don't get the academic route, it's because you're not good enough. And I think we really need to emphasize that, you know, some postdocs are really suited for those sorts of either industrial or government type or lots of different types of positions. Science media, for example, are, you know, great opportunities that where we need more PhD thinkers.
In government policy, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we keep hearing that we need people who have a background in science in government and government policy, but people don't see that as a valid career path. So I think we really need to foster that amongst our postdocs, because right now they're just kind of, if they're not moving in that academic position, they don't know where they're going and they're stagnating.
So here's something I hadn't thought of before, so this might be risky. I wonder about the notion of a postdoc that's meant to take someone with a science background and make them into a science policy person, as opposed to more of what they've been doing before.
Yeah, and there's lots of positions, there's lots of places in the country where if we geared them and we you know, mentored them, you know, along with their science background in things such as policy, or just expose them sometimes to the opportunities that exist, then I think you would find a niche of postdocs or, PhD holders who would really gravitate towards that. Right now, they're kind of ending up in those positions a little bit, almost by chance sometimes.
Or not ending up and staying in the parking lot, which is the scary part.
Yes.
So let's talk about CAPS a little bit. How did you get started?
So I think there's been postdoc associations across the country, and we kind of fell under the National Postdoc Association in the U.S. And a group of us were actually at a meeting in 2007, and we got together and we said, you know, this is great, the NPA in the U.S. is making a lot of headway, but we need our own advocacy group because the issues in funding and science policy in Canada are very different. So that core group of about 8 or 9 postdocs and people from postdoc offices formed what became CAPS. And we still exist as a very ad hoc group, but we've actually grown to about 20 to 25 members across the country.
And are there postdoc associations in individual universities?
Yeah, there actually are quite a few. The University of Calgary actually formed quite a few years ago, around the same time as the MPA, which was in 1997. So they've actually spearheaded the postdoc association in Canada. But there are quite a few, I would hazard to say almost a dozen, in different universities across the country.
Now, are they moving toward unionization, or is that an issue here at all?
There are actually two universities where postdocs are either working towards unionization or have already achieved that. And that's pretty much on par with what we see in the U.S. There are a couple universities there that have also moved in that direction.
So any sort of movement toward unionization makes one think that there must be some underlying problems that a group approach is perceived to be useful. So what kind of underlying problems are there with these with postdocs?
I think that what drove some of those drives and general dissatisfaction was this lack of recognition of what a postdoc was. And when there's this, you know, amorphous kind of lost status, I think abuses are sometimes inevitable. And I think it's some of those egregious issues mm-hmm. that have driven postdocs to representation and what was prevalent at their universities, what they went for.
I'm going to drill a little deeper here because I bet a lot of our listeners don't really know what goes on behind the closed lab door, so to speak. So just talk a little bit, you know, in general of some of the real problems that postdocs have.
I think the biggest thing is that postdocs come from a graduate program where they're very, very much protected by the university. They pay tuition. There's very strict guidelines that deal with graduate education. But when they move into a postdoc, oftentimes the university doesn't track them in any real way. So things like hours of work, pay, leave, all of these, even scientific issues like how many conferences you attend and publication order and those sorts of things have to be negotiated. And if they're not negotiated properly, usually if there's a disagreement, the postdoc ends up on the losing end.
So what about maternity leaves in particular?
Yeah, maternity leaves don't exist for postdocs.
And benefits?
No, none. No, usually some universities have access to some of these extended benefits they can pay into, but generally postdocs don't have a lot of access to those sorts of benefits.
So if all postdocs were treated as, or classified as employees, would they then have access to benefits? Who would pay for the benefits?
It's funny. I think a lot of postdocs believe that if they became employees, that benefits would naturally follow. However, going back to the temporary nature of postdocs, mm-hmm. we wouldn't be permanent employees. So we would be kind of temporary contractual employees, and they don't always give access to the same sort of extended benefits that normal, you know, permanent employees do. So I think that's a real fallacy that, you know, just changing us into employees would result in extended benefits, when I don't think that's the case.
Let alone pension contributions.
No, not at all. Not necessarily at all. Those would all have to be negotiated by case-by-case basis.
Right. So it's an interesting distinction between a grad student and a postdoc that all of a sudden something as bizarre to a young person as pension might actually come to the fore. But
yeah, I mean, it's funny, like as you get to that postdoc stage, you're talking about a group that are in their early 30s and their cohort, you know, who haven't gone to graduate school are buying houses and thinking of retirement and having children and actually making a living wage, whereas postdocs aren't usually. And that then it becomes a real crunch, especially if you're not moving into that permanent position within a year or two.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit. Marianne and I have been talking about the myth of the retiring professor, because the temporary nature of this is predicated in most, particularly government and other presentations we see about the demographics of the thousands and hundreds of thousands of the baby boomers retiring. So there you go, Marianne.
So the myth of the retiring professor. I entered graduate school in 1997, and I remember being told, you know, you're coming in at a great time because there's going to be a massive...
I've told my students that.
There's a massive retirement of professors, and we keep hearing that, and that never seems to actually come to fruition. And now that I'm a senior postdoctoral fellow and applying for positions, there aren't that many positions posted. And with mandatory retirement pretty much abolished across the country, we're also not seeing that massive retirement. Just because one-third of professors are over 55 does not in any way mean that they're retiring in any mass numbers.
So what do you think should be done about this? Do you think that this is a combination of the newness of the lack of mandatory retirement and the downturn in the economy, or is this some other kind of scenario being played out?
I think they're both play into it. I think the economic downturn, you see a lot of hiring freezes across the country, which certainly makes it acutely bad. I think this mandatory retirement also doesn't open the job market. But many universities just aren't taking in new positions, even though they're taking on many more undergraduates and many more graduate students. So with more graduates, there's going to be more postdocs, and there's with less faculty positions, the parking lot's only going to get bigger. And that's the real fear. But we're being told going in, but there is going to be retirement, and there is going to be positions, and that just not isn't the case.
So I'm going to branch out here a little bit. So one of the discussions at faculty levels, so which is the other part of the other player in this dance, is that the notion of tenure blocks up the stream. And so once you've been, you know, successful at getting tenure, then you don't really have to go for review again. And there are many presidents and many boards and other people saying, well, we should have continual review like you do in an industry. So, you know, the postdocs have any thoughts on the role of tenure going forward?
It's not something that I've spent a lot of time thinking about. I think the real abyss that exists for postdocs is not tenure. It's the position.
It's the door.
It's the door. It's getting in the front door, and with very few positions. And what we find is that positions that are being posted are becoming more and more and more specialized, whereas the research we do in our postdocs have to be, tend to be highly multidisciplinary and highly collaborative, that it's when those positions are posted, it's becoming increasingly hard to slot yourself in. Mm-hmm. We come from large labs that are well funded, and the funding agencies are saying we fund multidisciplinary collaborative research.
Yeah, so it's a direct competition to this notion of interdisciplinarity.
Yes,
so if
you're
interdisciplinary at your own risk.
Yeah.
If you don't have a job.
You don't really realize that until you're applying for positions. You think, well, I'm in a top research lab, and you know, you're getting lots of publications because that lab is funded well. But when it comes to striking it on your own, and you have to strike it on your own, getting that position and selling yourself as, you know, spanning three fields is very difficult when a lot of job advertisements are for very, very specific types of positions.
So I'm wondering if that speaks to a different notion of the parking lot. So the parking lot, you know, we're all lobbying the government to provide money for these cars to go in our parking lot. But the idea would be that perhaps instead of postdocs, the government could be giving short-term funding of, say, 3 years for a new faculty position.
Yeah,
right,
I think.
And then it's short term, all right, but it's doing what you would be proposing to do if you had a job. So you would have more of the teaching experiences, more of the administrative, you know, the more rounded. Whether or not that would sort of partner with fewer publications might be a problem, you know. So I put that out there.
Yeah, I think you won't hear many postdocs say we need more postdocs. I mean, we already know that there are so many postdocs who are not moving on to positions. I think you'd hear a lot of postdocs argue there should be less postdocs. It should be more competitive at that level because it's a false sense of movement when you're not actually moving. You're moving from, you know, the lab to the parking lot, which isn't a real step up. I think if there were fewer, more competitive, more realistic positions that allowed for transition, allowed for you to prove your grant writing abilities, to prove yourself at a more fundamental level, so when you apply for these positions, I think that would help facilitate some movement out of the parking lot. But making the parking lot bigger is not going to make any.
So there's this, certainly this, I would call it a myth, but this perception that the parking lot is mainly used in the social sciences and humanities as cheap labor for teaching. But what I'm hearing, the more I talk to the CAPS people, the parking lot is everywhere. It's just as deep in the medical sciences as it is anywhere. Is that true?
Oh, absolutely. I think there are large proportions of postdocs in life, you know, life sciences, both biology and medicine, and they have a purpose because these huge labs that have labor-intensive and quite complex projects need that level of supervision of graduate students and undergraduates, that level of highly qualified personnel. And that allows these large, very successful labs to function. But again, there's a little bit of dysfunction of cheap labor. We get there and we're we're relatively inexpensive, and we're at our most productive mm-hmm. that we will be in our career. So, but yeah, there tends to be a lot of them, and not everybody is going to be successful.
So I suppose I could sort of summarize this part by saying that many of these are, the goal is to increase the productivity of the lab more than to increase the training of the trainee. Is that going too far?
Yeah, it's lab specific. I mean, I think mentoring and those sorts of things are very important goals for postdocs mm-hmm. to have, especially if they want to run their own lab. It depends on the focus of the mentor. Mm-hmm. If he really wants to facilitate the person moving on, then they facilitate that.
But would it take 6 years?
That is field specific. Mm-hmm. I mean, you see a lot of job applications saying a minimum of 3 years postdoctoral experience. And if there's a minimum of three, that means that 4 and 5 is often better.
But is that also this notion of specialization? So they want people more and more specialized because the market's there or because they actually need those other skills?
I don't know. I think a lot of it is driven by competition. Mm-hmm. If you get hundreds of applications and, you know, the most productive and the most papers are mm-hmm. from postdocs have been there 6 years, then those are the people getting the positions. So that means more people will need 6 years to be competitive. So it's a little bit of a self-fulfilling prophecy right now.
It's interesting because there are always cycles in hiring at the faculty levels, and I'm not convinced that the more and more postdocs we have in these situations doesn't just make it worse as opposed to dampening it out a bit. I mean, I'm not sure what the net effect is of having people tied up for 6 years in a postdoc. Do we just hide the reality of the peaks and the troughs?
And I think you're seeing in some of these larger labs that where PhD graduates are seeing the struggles of their postdocs, that they're deking out of the mm-hmm. academic route very early. They're not willing to give up an extra 6 years.
Maybe that's why the university has kept them all hidden so far.
Yeah, probably. But yeah, I've seen a lot of graduate students say, I don't think I can do that, especially when there's no guarantees at the end. So a lot of them are, I mean, really talented PhD graduates who are not even getting in the game because they want to have some security and have some, you know, buy a house and have children and do all the things that their contemporaries are doing.
So how do we turn this around? So how can CAPS and CAGS help together to try and get these people in the game?
I think there's baby steps and then there's the larger steps. I think the baby steps are taking the postdocs out of the shadows, giving them a defined status, recognizing the contribution they make to research in institutions, and bringing us out there, giving us a living wage, give us the training that we can't get in our labs, mm-hmm. give us the information about the job markets, and not doubling the size of the parking lot.
So something that I've noticed recently is that we have graduate students now on all committees everywhere, the university, the Senate, faculty councils, everywhere, but no postdocs. So if we get stronger local representation, do you think that will come or would be useful? Do you think postdocs would take the time to come to these committees?
I think so. I really do. I think even in the last 2 years, we've seen a big difference in the original, well, what is a postdoc mentality to people actually recognizing our importance. And I think that's visibility, and I think it's representation. And I think it would also be really helpful to graduate students to engage the postdocs mm-hmm. at their institution, just to have a...
Even find them.
Yeah, to know where they are. Because realistically, that's where a large number of them are going. Mm-hmm. So if they have a more realistic view going in, even if you're a master's student considering a PhD, knowing some postdocs would actually be really helpful.
Might also help to bring the awareness of the skills that you're going to need other than the academic ones by the time you're a postdoc, so the grant writing, financial management, people management, communications, things like that, so that people start working on these skills at the master's and PhD level and it's not a big surprise when they get to be a postdoc.
Yeah, I think there is a certain amount of naivete amongst graduate students. They think, oh, I get a PhD and then I get a position. And that exists in some fields, and for now, but it doesn't exist at all. And you know, extensive training after your PhD, it will come as quite a shock to some graduates.
It's also expensive at that point.
Yeah, it becomes very expensive, especially if you've taken a financial hit to be in graduate school. You know, student loans come due because you're no longer a student. So it becomes a very stressful financial time.
Okay, well, we can all hope for better things. And at KEGS, we're waiting for the CAPS people to come with their official, I don't know what to call it, constitution, so that they can come with the grad students and help us all go forward in this. So I'm actually really looking forward to it, Marianne. I think it'll be pretty exciting. And it certainly at Dalhousie, we've been finding postdocs everywhere. It's been quite interesting.
Yeah, we're not as invisible as we once were, and we're actually very excited about moving some of these issues forward as opposed to just kind of grumbling in our own lab space.
Yeah, great. Anyway, thank you very much, Marianne, and we wish you luck in getting out of the parking lot.
Thank you.
That's it for this episode. If you'd like to get in touch with me about something you heard on this podcast or about an issue that you'd like to see covered, please email me at carolyn.waters@dal.ca. You can also leave a comment at the bottom of the page where this podcast is posted at universityaffairs.ca. Until next time, I'm Carolyn Waters, and thanks for listening.